Gary Holt. We have a terrific show lined up for you today. It's going to be very interesting and a lot of fun. We welcome our good friend Jim McGarvey, the Executive Director of Backcountry Horsemen of America, and he will update us on issues and legislation that's important to all horsemen and trail riders, and we're going to be talking a little bit about wildfires today. And then in the second segment of today's show, we're going to be visiting with Cody Walker and Kansas Sec of Sombrero Ranches. They're going to take us on the largest horse herd drive in North America. I have a feeling that you're going to feel like you're experiencing the thrill and the excitement of hundreds of horses thundering across the Colorado open range. But right now, we remind you that the Saddle Up America program is made possible by Trail Guard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. You can learn more about Trail Guard at trailguard.org and by Trailhead Supply, your full-service online horse packing supply store. You can visit with them online at trailheadsupply.com and by our great sponsors in the general store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the Western and equestrian lifestyle in the general store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. So grab a big cup of coffee, take a deep seat in that saddle, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Jim McGarvey. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Drifting again like an old tumbleweed, riding the wind with the dandelion seeds. Someday I'll land, but I don't know when. Till then I'm drifting again. She cut me loose and told me don't come back. Now I'm like a hobo by the railroad track, drifting again like an old tumbleweed, riding the wind with the dandelion seeds. Someday I'll land, but I don't know when. Till then I'm drifting again. South, east, or west, it don't matter much to me. I guess she wanted me to put down roots, but I just couldn't grow them through these cowboy boots. Drifting again like an old tumbleweed, riding the wind with the dandelion seeds. Someday I'll land, but I don't know when. Till then I'm drifting again. Yes, I'm drifting. Till then, I'm drifting again. Let's do some drifting. Here we go. Got the wind in my back. Yes, sir.
R.W. Hampton, Drifting Again, and a fun way to start the show with one of our favorite guests, and that's Jim McGarvey. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. Glad to be here.
Well, we are glad to have you, and I think we have a timely topic that we're going to visit about today. I woke up to the news this morning, and there were over 60,000 acres of land that was on fire out in California. And let's talk a little bit today about wildfires and how that impacts trail riding and trail service and the backcountry, and some proposals that are involved in that.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, just the big fire, I guess there's 62 or 64,000 acres, which is right at 100 square miles. That's in Northern California, near Shasta Trinity, but there's over a dozen fires going in California right now. I think the governor's declared the whole state a disaster, and which brings in some action. Some of those fires are, there's ownership to them, which means the commander of the fire, which serve part of government therein, and who owns maybe most of the land. But in this case, the Rocky Mountain Fire, it's the state of California. Other ones, it's the Forest Service, and others, it's the Bureau of Land Management out in California. So they each got, but they all overlap and contribute to it. Doesn't matter whose land, it's just because it can spread, and it's only 12% contained. A couple of interesting things about that Rocky Mountain Fire and some of the others that are going on right now. For the 64,000 acres, it's cost them nearly $15 million so far through this morning to fight this fire. But one called the Lowell Fire that's 85% contained was only 2,300 acres, but it's nearly $18 million.
Goodness.
Yeah, and so another one, 3,900 acres, is nearly $9 million. And so it's, yeah, I think it varies with the terrain, the private property. Some folks' homes are wiped down. Also, was kind of a bad thing to see was where they were, folks were ordered out of their homes to evacuate, and then folks came in and robbed the homes, and looters.
Yeah.
So you always have that. My dad, it puts me in mind of looters during national disasters and how things have changed. But in Dayton, Ohio, in one of the classic floods that changed national policy, I grew up in Dayton, Ohio. It was the 1913 flood, and the federal government changed the way they handled flooding and everything with that flood. It was famous for that. And my dad, who was 10 at the time, he said when they caught looters, they executed them. And so.
Yeah. That would stop it.
And because it is life and death, people won't leave their homes because of fear of looting, then they're in danger, and then you endanger the rescue folks. So it's don't
right.
Looters
right,
but it's you know, there's, it's halfway controversial about the wildfires and halfway obvious. I think you know, we're talking about the causes, but where you stand on global warming or global change, whether you're a skeptic or a supporter, you have to agree that things are changing. Canada's quadrupled in the past 10 years, their cost for fighting fires. And same with the United States, it's fires increasing really considerably. Talk to some folks in Congress, let's say, and others, that the government agencies aren't doing enough to suppress the fires. The government agencies, we don't have the funds or the people to suppress fires. Not suppress the fires that are going on, but for management practices to keep fires from starting.
Right, and before they get started.
Before they get started, but that's a monumental task. Some forests have not had a fire in so long that the trees have gotten old and tumbled where you can't walk through. I mean, it's just like a pickup sticks or toothpicks fell on the floor in a pile. You just can't get through, and I'm not sure what you can do about that. I mean, you can't go in and bulldoze the forest, you know, to get the
right.
Trees, and they're almost impenetrable, and so it's a sticky wicket there. I know they've had different philosophies of whether to let it burn, stop them. You know, we got private property close to almost all these fires, and that brings in a whole different element, and can't risk lives for fighting private property fires, but it does happen. So And then, people blame congressional neglect, not funding this, and Congress blames the agencies. And so, and then we got that, this poorly funded system for fighting wildfires we've talked about before. So,
one of the things, I guess, Jim, that really, and you mentioned it just a second ago, and that is that there are so many people that are now living close to these national forest and surrounding, our public lands, that where at one point in time, Mother Nature kind of took care of things. I mean, fire is a natural event, and fires would go through and they would clean up the forest and get rid of the old growth that needed to be gone and make room for new growth to come back in. But the challenge now is that people are utilizing our public lands more today, I think, than they ever have in the past. And the other is that you've got so many people that are building and living in so much proximity now that's become a challenge to be able to allow those fires just to do what nature would intend for them to do.
Well, yeah, it'd be maybe unique in the world in a way, but as America's one idea is to the ability to live with some acres around you, some separation, not necessarily have to live in a city, though a lot of our folks do, a lot of us do, but you take on a responsibility that something could happen to you. Mm-hmm. It's like building in a flood zone, it's going to happen. It's not if, it's when. And, myself, we live in a log home here surrounded by trees, so I would want the fire department to come out if we don't have the same kind of, forest out there. We got the hardwoods of the south, but,
right.
You want your house protected, but at the same time, you're taking a gamble. And I think a lot of the folks do mitigate that to some extent with metal roofs out there. They cut back, trees around a perimeter to their home, but not all of them do. And
right.
And then just the fact that folks are nearby can cause fires. I think everybody's doesn't seem to happen very often, although it appears that the one woman they arrested started 14 fires. And not sure she started the Rocky Mountain or the Rocky Fire, but I came across as a national security issue, actually the National Security Agency. They had a meeting, and a part of it was public that you could see the video. And they discussed, this was during the wildfire in Colorado of a couple of years ago, and I can't remember the name of it, it begins with a W, but anyway, where the National Security Agency talked about how it's a national security issue for terrorists to start wildfires in the West because it costs so much, it ties up so many people, and it can cause lies if it's done with deliberation.
Right.
The public and the firefighters and rescue workers. So it's a lot to that. They've talked about, he was talking about using fighter jets at low altitudes because they can cover a lot of ground, and with the technology they can spot heat, rather than satellites
right.
in the sky.
Right.
All the, they had a lot of different ideas. They were taking it seriously. So this is a lot more. I know it's 7 o'clock news at night and ABC, and they lead off with the fires. It's dramatic, and probably all summer. Then if the rains come, it's the floods and the mudslides.
Well, yeah, natural disasters cause a lot of problems for us at every front. And of course, people have become accustomed to the fact that during the certain seasons, we're going to have the fire issues with our western states. Fortunately, not that much back here in the southeast, but we have our other challenges. So a lot of issues, and I know it puts a burden and a strain on the National Forest Service and our other public service officials to try to put money into some projects that we would like to see done when money is having to be redirected to fight these fires. And of course you've got to do it, but it's a challenge, isn't it?
It is. And listeners, bear with me on this, that the last end of last year, the Forest Service came out with a chart presentation that, actually it was August, it was published in August 2014, so about a year ago, and I'll just give you some quick highlights from this presentation. It's kind of staggering with the impact it's hit the Forest Service, is that the opening lines are the the rising fire expenditures have been slowly shift has been to slowly shift agency finances away from the forest management and restoration, research, recreation, other mission critical objectives, and towards firefighting and other expenses related to fire management. So just some charts, I hit some highlights here. In 1995, this is from 1995 to 2014, so a 20-year period. In 95, only 16% of the Forest Service budget was for fires. Now it's 42%.
Wow.
In all of fighting fires, it's wildfire management is it's 51% across all agencies. The number of firefighters, Forest Service, the number of people that are firefighters in the Forest Service jumped from about 5,800 to nearly 12,000.
Wow.
And then at the same time, it's been a decrease of 17 from 17, the other folks from 17,000 to 11,000 that managed the rest of the forest. And so it's been a dramatic switch of people and money to fight fires. And the watershed management funds are down 22%. Facilities, this is something. Facilities fixing maintenance is down 67% in 20 years.
Wow.
They're down 46%, trails 14%. Deferred maintenance is down 95%. It just goes on.
Wow.
And on.
Wow.
And everything is so is everything to shift the funding to fight the fires. And but so you know we want to keep things open and going and go to the Bob Marshall and all that, but it's a tough thing to handle with this wildfire.
Well. Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, and again, you have to deal with these things because of the population expansion into these areas. Otherwise, you could just let those fires go, I suppose, and do what nature intended for them to do when it's a natural cause. But let's come back and talk a little bit about maybe what some of the answers are, if there are any. And I don't know if there are any, but we might talk about those. And then we want to talk about a little trip that you did, too, that I think is kind of fun and get away from the seriousness of the fires for just a minute. But right now, we want to thank one of our great show sponsors, and that is Trailhead Supply. Trailhead Supply is your full-service online horse packing supply store with their storefront location in Kalispell, Montana. Trailhead Supply doesn't just sell packing supplies. They stand behind every product they sell, and they use them. Trailhead Supply is your online source for the very best in camping gear, horse packing equipment, and horse riding gear. You can shop with Trailhead Supply online today at trailheadsupply.com. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Jim McGarvey about this wildfire situation. And then we're going to take a little trip up to the Bob Marshall Wilderness with Jim and his wife, Cindy. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Sunset, purple lining on the clouds, white lightning raced across the Rattlesnake Ridge, thunder crashing loud, riding along just the old coyote and me, there goes a mountain hare, checking water troughs on the Pioneer Trail, sage and cedar in the air. I thank God for Wyoming, wide open spaces and the West. Thank God for the cowboys, the cattle and the ranches that are left. Sweetwater River for the magpie. Nowhere. raggedness over any softened land. Wolf and the buffalo and me. Just give me my horse and a good fitting saddle. Set my spirit free. I thank God for Wyoming, wide open spaces and the
That is Trinity Seeley and a beautiful song, The Middle of Nowhere, which is where we really like to be, isn't it, Jim?
Yes, it is.
Oh, gosh. Well, we were talking about the wildfires, and there is a Wildfire Disaster Funding Act that's being proposed right now. And can you tell us just real briefly exactly what that's intended to do?
Yeah, again, going back to where the budget of the Forest Service went from 16% to 42% to fight fires of a piece of pie, getting up near half of the piece of pie of their whole cost. What they've had to do, though, is to pay for that 42% by borrowing from other portions of the Forest Service budgets, and which even diminishes yet still the ability to fix things in real time, repair things in real time, and then the money is then put back in sort of retroactively. However, that doesn't fix the fact that it went from 16% to nearly 50% of the budget, but it does.
Right.
It further complicates just handling of writing checks, if you will. You know, you got to pay for all these things out there about in real time. And so what this Wildfire Funding Act will do will be to at least put the money in the budget. Take the average of the last 10 years fire suppression costs and then put it into the Forest Service so they don't have to borrow. It doesn't increase their budget. It just gives it to them in real time so they don't have to borrow from the other departments. And it's got a pretty good backing going in. And in September, I think it's the second week in September, Congress goes back. And so maybe if enough of them have watched the news and the world on fire in America, that they might get that passed.
Might pay attention. Well, it takes something like a fire, I think, under them to get something moved sometimes. So anyway, we'll watch for that and see if that does take place. And in the meantime, for all of our friends that are out on the West Coast and in the Western states that are really just in the middle of and maybe the beginning of the fire season, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with all of them. So it's tough situation, and we hope everybody stays safe and their livestock stay safe as well. But let's talk about something that might be just a little bit more fun to discuss, and that was a great trip that you had to the Bob Marshall recently.
Well, it is, and as a minor segue from the fires to the Bob Marshall was, while we were there, there was yet another fire, but it was in Glacier National Park. And that was awfully expensive per acre, too. It starts called the Reynolds Fire, and they had to close the eastern part of the park, and they're still fighting it, but they're inviting everybody to come back into the park again. But that was in the Glacier National Park right up at the Canadian border. But we went to the Bob Marshall. Cindy and I, we got back Monday a week ago. We were out there for 9 days, and if Tina May's going in, they're probably going in on the western side. We went on the eastern side. The Bob Marshall's about 1.1 million acre wilderness. It's four national forests, and they're managed. It's called a complex, the Bob Marshall Wilderness Complex, because it's it overlaps into different jurisdictions, still in the Forest Service, but there's different wildernesses, and so they manage it as a complete unit. Yellowstone got switched to the Yellowstone Ecosystem Complex because, you know, if you fire outside the border, it affects Yellowstone. So anyway, but it's a good way to manage. And the reason it's important, well, it's important for a lot of things. It's called the most pristine, well-preserved ecosystem in the lower 48. When we rode for 9 days, we found one item on the trail, I'm telling you, and that was a water bottle. It was water, 3/4 full, and that came into a discussion. So we're riding along, and Mac Long, he and his wife are the Bob Marshall Wilderness Outfitters. We discussed, and he said, you know, we're gonna leave it on the trail because a hiker might have, you know, dropped out of their knapsack and a backpack, and so they may come back for it. He said, if they don't, somebody will pick it up. But he said, last time they were out, they went back. Because water, you should have a filtering system with you, but not everybody does, and water's pretty precious, clean water. So we left it there. It was just kind of odd, you know. after we went over 100 miles and on trails and campgrounds, and immaculately, it's pristine.
The only trace was that half-filled water bottle, yeah.
We left it there. Cindy started to get off her horse to pick it up, and Max said, well, let's leave it. Then we stopped and started talking about the decision to do that. You know, it was kind of fun. But I think the Bob Marshall was backcountry horse. Well, a lot of people, special place, but it was Bob Marshall himself was Eastern, grew up in a wealthy family in the East, graduated from an Ivy League school in forestry, then immediately headed west. And worked for the Forest Service. He was did a lot of different things, but it was always towards the ecology of the West, mapping it and arguing the case for it. He had another side to him that was, besides being brilliant, but was that he was an extraordinary long-distance hiker, I mean, almost off the charts.
Wow.
He would do days. He would mark down the number of his 25-mile days. Then his 50-mile days, then his 75-mile days, how many 75-mile days he hiked, and 100-mile days. I mean, you have to go 24 hours a day to do 100 miles and 75 miles. So he was legendary with that ability. He died early, and people aren't sure if that wasn't part of it, but I think he died on a train going east. But he did get work for the Forest Service as head of recreation back in the day and before he passed away. And we have a good friend, Joe Mead, who's now has that position, which is kind of an honorary, besides being an important position for recreation, it's kind of an honorary thing, since Bob Marshall held it himself. But he was also, he helped write the Wilderness Act, though it took nearly 20 more years before it finally got enacted. But he was a co-founder of the Wilderness Society, so it goes a long way. And for the backcountry horse, and we were founded in the Bob Marshall Wilderness, the idea. So
right.
It's like going back to the motherland. So we did, it tells you the immensity of the place. We went in, the Continental Divide goes right up the middle, almost, we would say the middle of the Bob Marshall Wilderness, and so the water flows, of course, to the Columbia River on the west side, and the Missouri and Mississippi on the east, but we did like a 100-and-some-mile loop, always along the forks of the Sun River, which was a preserve. 100 years, that 100,000 acres was preserved 100 years ago last year, which helped put it right into the wilderness. But we rode up to the wall, which is the place to go. It's a 22-mile outcrop, of course, 22 miles of outcrop that's 1,000, 1,800 feet, 2,000 feet tall.
Wow.
Above the plateau that's already at 7,000 feet, 6,000 feet, so... I had a broken toe on the trip, so small toe, and it was going pretty good. And Cindy and I and another woman and an 8-year-old grandson of Mac, we hiked up there to touch it, you know. It was bad news for my toe because the rocks were so. Got up there, oh man! And the rocks all roll. I mean, it's like you could, if they started rolling, you'd slide all the way down, you know, to the bottom again. But anyway, we had a terrific time, And it goes to the lengths of watching Mac and Connie Long, who learned the trade from Smoke Elser, the legendary Packer out there.
Right.
And actually, they purchased his business when he retired. And so their lead guide, Jackson, he had Smoke's guitar, lets him borrow it during the summer to play music and
wow.
get it back. The guitar case is 50 years old. It looked like it's been on every trip, too.
Yeah. But, there's a great documentary on Smoke that I found not too long ago. I think I'll probably try to post it on our website so people can go and take a look at that. But he was quite the legendary outfitter and a personality through the Bob Marshall, and did a lot
Smoke would be a good one to have on your show because he's such a philosopher. We had dinner with he and his wife and Connie and Mac and another couple our trip in the spring to Montana for dinner, and for 3 hours and 40 minutes we sat at a table and nobody got up to go to the bathroom or anything. Everybody speak, you know, and it's real compelling. And, yeah, that video is great. And Mac and Connie are in that because they were the packing, you know, so you'll see quotes from them, too. And gives a great explanation of why the Bob is special.
Yeah. It really does. We'll have to share that. Well, we're gonna take another great trip here in just a minute. And one of these days, I'll make it out to the Bob Marshall. Not this year, but one day and get to experience all of that. But let's talk about Backcountry Horsemen of America, where they can find out information and a lot of great videos, a lot of great information on legislation and things that are pending. So give us that website one time.
It's two places to look for us. One is the BCHA.org or our website. And then you can go to the Facebook, the Backcountry Horses of America Facebook, and that's always got a lot of breaking news too, and updates and special events. So please come to it.
All right. Well, you've got a great website. We've talked about the fact that was updated in the last year, and just a great website with a lot of great information. And whoever it is that's taking care of that Facebook page for Backcountry Horsemen, we know who that is, don't we?
Yeah, I think her name's Cindy McGarvey. She's a good member, a great member.
Cindy's doing a great job of keeping everything updated on there, and a lot of great information as well. So I guess we just need to have Cindy come on the show with you pretty soon.
She'd be a lot more entertaining.
you guys are a great couple. You're a great couple. Well, Jim, we're gonna take off and go to the great state of Colorado. Have you ever dreamed of being part of the largest horse herd drive in North America?
I tell you what, when I saw that, because I've been at the most maybe 20 horses or 30, trying to keep them going, same direction and everything, is incredibly hard. And for 100, you know, it's got to be quite a spectacle to see, just to see that many.
Hundreds and hundreds of horses, but we're going to go visit with Cody Walker and Kansas Sec of Sombrero Ranches, and we're going to find out how this all got started and what it's like to travel with them and visit with the Sombrero Ranches when we come back. And Jim, thank you. You can hang on if you want to. It'll be a fun show.
But we're going to visit.
We'll visit with Cody in Kansas in just a moment. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Riding out one dark and windy day, On a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once somebody heard a red-eyed cow he saw plowing through the ragged sky up a cloudy draw. Brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Horns were black and shiny and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky. For he saw some riders coming hard and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-i-yo. Eyes were blurred, their shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught them yet. Cause they gotta ride forever on that range up in the sky. And horses snorting fire as they ride on, hear their cry. Yippee-i-yo.
That's our friend Bren Hill with his Ghost Riders in the Sky from his new album, Spirit Rider. And we are traveling up to Colorado to visit with Cody Walker and Kansas Sec at the Sombrero Ranches. And guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, sir.
Good to have you. And, you know, we've had a lot of excitement from folks wanting to find out all about Sombrero Ranches and the horse drive. But there is a great backstory to all of this, Cody. And that's why don't you tell us a little bit about how your folks and your uncle got started with Sombrero Ranches and exactly what you do. And that will lead us up into a little bit later in the show talking about what the horse drive is all about.
Well, you know, for a guy like me, it sure has been a privilege just to be related to the people that had started Sombrero and the horse drive itself. My mom's family, the Mantles out of there, and my, of course, her brother, my uncle, Pat Mantle, they were sons and daughters of homesteaders down in that part of Colorado. And they actually were catching remount horses for the cavalry down in Box Canyons. And when my father met my mom down in there and knew that that family knew horses in that whole area, they started the Sombrero Ranch together in 1959. And there was, wow, a big ranch down there. Down there were Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid had their hideout and all that. And they'd like to gather them horses up and they'd drive them clear to Craig, Colorado, 60 miles. And a lot of times they just get on them so that they're broke and they could sell them when they run to town. But it kind of developed into a way of moving the herd from one place to the other.
Wow, wow, that's quite a story. So when they started out, they were breaking horses and reselling them, providing them as remounts for the service.
Yes, and, that was their business that they had down there, and you know they were just tough people living a tough life.
Yeah. Now today that's changed just a little bit. The military doesn't use horses and mules like they did at one time. And so let's talk a little bit about what Sombrero Ranch does today, because a lot of folks would think, well, they're talking with another guest ranch on the show today, but that's not the case. Tell us a little bit about what Sombrero Ranch actually does.
You know, Sombrero Ranch is the, from our understanding, is the largest horse herd in northern Colorado, and it provides horses to kids' camps, guest ranches. We provided a lot of rodeo horses back in the 60s, 70s, and the early 80s, but now we just put people on horses and kind of showcase the Colorado landscape on horseback.
Well, you are, I guess what many of us would be familiar with the term, a concessionaire. Go ahead.
I'm talking to you from right now at 8,400 feet, and this morning I sent five lucky people over the Continental Divide. It is 11:45 here, just about, so they're probably just peaking out at 12,300 feet, trying to get up over the Divide and the Grand Lake. So that's just one of the many jobs that these horses have. But
wow.
That horse and that ranch, it's the real deal. It's not a guest ranch. And if you survive that ride, you sign up for it, we're even going to give you a buckle just for going from one gate to the next. And honestly, not everybody's going to get that buckle that goes on that ride. So you got to have some real grit and ride for the brand and be the real deal to make it.
That's great. That's great. Well, you have Sombrero Ranches has concessions across the state of Colorado.
And, yes, they do. They have some concessions in the forest. And one of our big concessions is in Rocky Mountain National Park. And that provides visitors with a real opportunity to visit the horse or the park on horseback and kind of a stepping through time. And the nice thing about riding a horse in the national park is it's better than hiking because you get to look around and, I don't know, you get to spend time with what I think is one of the greatest animals ever created.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'd have to agree with you on that. So we have a lot of audience that's in Europe and really around the world, and a lot of our audience love to come and take their horses and go somewhere. But the beauty of what you do is you provide the horses. So people come from across the globe, I would suppose, and participate in seeing what Colorado has to offer. And how many different locations do you have, Cody?
We have seven, what we call a more of a retail stable location. At those locations, you don't stay, you just come and ride. And we'll take you anywhere from, 1 hour all the way up to a 2 or 3 day trip. We prefer to take you somewhere, drop you off, and haul those horses out of the wilderness and come back and pick you up a few days later, or just ride straight through for anywhere from 1 to 8 hours.
Okay. All right. Now, if I wanted to come out and lease or rent a horse and spend a week in the backcountry, could I do that?
You certainly could lease some horses. That's a whole nother department that of our business. It's not as popular as it used to be. The horse lease business for people in the backcountry, it's a lot of those folks have kind of gotten older. So most of the time now we kind of focus in on guided trail rides more within a day than a multiple day.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, there are a few of old folks like me that are still out there. So
yeah, y'all do pretty good. It's just, you're running out of old folks every once in a while.
We are, we're getting short. We're getting in short supply, I guess. But, so let's talk about, you also have another part of your business, provides horses for what, outfitters and guides, and I suppose some guest ranches.
You know, we used to just explain us we're basically a Hertz rent-a-horse. So if you need a horse for any occasion, We'll do movies. We have done a couple of big movies lately, Cowboys and Aliens, and we had some horses in Tonto. And a lot of times, I'm sure some of the listeners in Europe are familiar with the Marlboro horses. We provide that big herd that runs through and has all the colors.
Oh, wow. 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 So really your business is kind of like, say, you're a Hertz Rent-A-Horse type operation,
yes,
but for a lot of different types of businesses. And I guess that really is what the horse drive is all about. We want to talk a little bit about that in just a moment, but we need to take a real quick break and talk about one of our sponsors. So if you guys will hang with us just a minute, we're going to come back.
I'm going to leave you with Kansas on that horse drive. I need to go get, I've got seven-year-old girls here desperate for a trail ride in the national park. I'm going to go put them on and leave you with
Kansas. Hey, Cody, take care of that, and appreciate you visiting with us. And we're going to come back, and we're going to talk with Kansas about more of what goes on with Sombrero Ranch on Equestrian Legacy Radio. But right now, let's talk about one of our great sponsors, and that is Trail Guard. Trail Guard is 24-hour roadside travel assistance with unlimited vehicle towing to a dealership that services your vehicle, a second tow vehicle to get your trailer and horses home or to your destination, 24-hour coverage for you and your vehicle or one you're driving or anyone driving your vehicle, and a 24-hour personal assistant to help you plan your trip, and much, much more. Trail Guard was founded with one mission in mind, and that is guarding you down life's trails. You can learn more today at Trail Guard at trailguard.org.
You can ride 100 miles and not see one fence. And you can drink from the rivers and the streams. And you can sleep under the stars, no matter where you are, in a cowboy's dreams. You can turn the radio on in your truck, on the station here, Chris Ledoux sings. And every road that you drive down leads you further from a town in a cowboy's dream. And everybody's got a horse and a good rope, and everybody's wearing boots, spurs, and jeans. When a lady passes by, oh, I wish life was what it seems in a cowboy's dream. You can take a man's handshake as his solemn vow. When he says I do, that's just what he means. The only time that he might cry is when his old cowpup dies in a cowboy's dreams. And everybody's got a horse and a good rope, and everybody's wearing spurs and jeans, and men tip their hats with pride when a lady passes by. Oh, I wish life was what it seems in a cowboy's dream. A cowboy's dream. You can ride 100 miles and not see one fence.
Joey and Rory, and the song is In a Cowboy's Dreams. And so we're going to talk to a real cowboy right now, and that's Kansas Sack. Kansas, good to have you.
Thank you, Bob.
Good to have you. You are in Estes Park. Talk to us a little bit about what you do right there, and then let's get into talking about this horse herd drive that we got people excited about.
First of all, I am in Estes Park, Colorado, and we are right on the edge of the city limits of Estes Park. And we run a stable here that is the original spot for the Sombrero Ranchers started renting their horses from back in 1959. And they set up a camp right up here above Boulder, Colorado, and started leasing horses up here on this corner, and they have never left.
Wow.
Cody's dad still owns a little piece of property here that he bought back in the early 70s from the McGregor Ranch. And we're still leasing horses here today. But right now, we do guided trail rides through the Rocky Mountains behind the stables here. And we do anywhere from 1 to 4 hour rides. And we do breakfast rides and the steak dinner ride, which is really, really good. So... popular rides we have.
Yeah, do you do the cooking?
You know, once in a while I have to, yes. You know, being a manager here, you got to know how to do everything.
I would think
so. Not just riding the horses, but you've got to make sure the horses get fed and make sure that the hay gets here, the grain gets here. You got to hire the help to get the summer rolling. And we are open year-round here at Estes Park now.
That's great.
We do winter rides, you know, and it's been good here.
You've got a great website, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But now I'm not sure what you do at Estes Park, because you have several locations through Colorado. But now you have weddings, you have sleigh rides that you do. How much of that goes on at Estes Park location?
The Estes Park locations is just strictly horseback riding.
Okay.
Now, not to say we haven't had a couple of weddings out here or wedding rehearsal dinners. We've done quite a few of those events. I actually witnessed a couple getting married out here once. But as far as what we do in Estes, we just really just do guided trail rides.
Okay.
Basically focus on families going out and getting the little kids on their horses for the first time and show them a good time in the Rocky Mountains.
Okay. All right. And
the sleigh ride. Now we got a bunch of sleigh rides going on, but they're on the other side of the mountain on the West Slope near the Granby area.
Okay. All right. So Sombrero Ranch has all of those different things that are available at some of the locations, but not at all of them. And again, they can go to the website and find out more about each location. But
right,
let's talk, Kansas, let's talk a little bit about how many horses that Sombrero Ranch has, because this is just an impressive number.
Sombrero Ranch has got approximately 1,100 head of horses right now. And that's plus or minus a couple hundred. We're always trying, you know, we're always buying new horses, and, you know, we always sell off some older geldings at the end of the year. And, you know, it's just, you lose some over the winter, and, you know, and you got to recount and try to make sure you have enough to fulfill the contracts for the upcoming seasons. And so it's a constant change on the number. But, you know,
right,
it's 1,100 is a good solid number right now, I believe.
Okay. All right. And so during the work year for these horses, they're pretty much out doing their job at the different locations. But then when that season is ending, they're all coming in to what, one of two locations?
Yeah, basically, after they're done with their summer season and they're done with their lease, they'll start dropping them off at the Big Gulch Ranch there in Craig, Colorado, or the Meeker Ranch there, just outside of Meeker. And at those two locations, we rent them out for hunters during the hunt seasons and stuff. Not a whole lot anymore, not as much as it used to be. The four-wheelers are kind of taking over as being more popular to go out and hunt on these days, but we still do a little bit of that. You know, and then after the hunt seasons are all over by Thanksgiving, you know, the horses are turned out to the winter pastures.
Okay, and let's talk about that. So you have, what, two different winter pastures? I believe we talked about a little bit yesterday.
Yes, sir.
Browns Park being the largest?
Yes, sir. There's about a 17,000-acre ranch there in Browns Park, and we have a BLM lease that is adjoint to it on the north side of 318 Highway there, and then there's some along the ranch on the south side of the road there as well. It's about okay. 70, close to 70,000 acres total.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good operation there. So, and I think that you told me that normally Browns Park, you'll have around 800 head of horses.
We are allowed to have up to 800 head of horses on a BLM lease out there.
Okay. All right. So the horses come in. Go ahead.
Yeah, it could range anywhere from 300 to 800 head. You know, usually we have at least 300 out there for sure.
Okay.
Just depending on the age and how new they are.
Okay. So the horses are coming out and they're kind of relaxing and taking a break while they're out there on this winter pasture. And so the video and everything that people have seen, are these horses when they're coming back in off of pasture and going through Mabel? But let's talk a little bit about what happens. You know, what time of year are the horses gathered up, and what's going on with these horses? Because they're kind of like me. If I've been out eating all winter, I'm getting a little fat and sassy, maybe.
Yes, sir. Yeah, they do.
Yeah. So what happens to these guys, and what's the time frame?
These guys have been out there, you know, since late November, and so the first weekend of every May of every year, we start the horse drive.
Okay.
But the week before that, we have to gather all the horses up and get them into one big pasture, what we call our holding pasture, which probably, you know, 1,000 acres.
Wow, so, that's a big pasture.
Yeah, so we have to gather that pasture up before we even start to drive that morning. But anyway, these horses, they're out there all winter. We get them gathered up, and we get them gathered up into our holding pasture here by the corrals, which is known as the Lone Wolf Corrals. And so at that point, that's where the Great American Horse Drive will start.
Okay. Now you spend time before you start driving, though. You're kind of tuning these horses up a little bit, aren't you?
Well,
do you do it there, or do you wait till you get to where you're going with them?
Well, we tune a few of them up there. Most of them, they don't get tuned up until they reach the Big Gulch Ranch there outside of Craig.
Okay.
Once they get the Big Gulch, then the party starts. The party starts when you start to drive, you know. Because we start riding some of them horses on the drive. Some of the cowboys do. They just jump on them, and we'll go have some fun, you know. And
yeah, I saw a video of somebody having a real big time on one of the horses on that drive.
There are some fat and sassy ones in there, that's for sure.
Yeah, they were. But let's talk about the drive. So you've got people that have been – this is 40 plus years that this drive has been taking place. And so you've got dudes and city slickers and all kinds of folks that like to come in and take part in this, and talk to us a little bit about that and what process they go through before they actually hit the trail and start back into Maybell with these horses.
So the actual part with the guests coming onto the drive, I believe started around 1998, and Cody actually kind of threw this out there to everybody because, you know, it costs a lot of money to feed all your hands and, you know, all this extra help that you would get. It, you know, everybody just wanted to come on and be a part of the drive. And we were feeding them all the time and housing them, a lot of people. And, you know, and it's like, man, it's just sure costing a lot of money just to get these horses down the road. But Cody, you know, he's like, hey, you know what? We're going to start charging people. So about 1998, I believe it was, or 1999, they just started charging a couple hundred dollars a person and just to see what would happen, you know. And, man, it just grew and grew from there. I mean, today, you know, we got up to, you know, 30 guests or so on the one drive. And a couple years in a row, we've had 60 guests up, you know, on the drive one year.
Wow. Wow.
I was a wrangler on the drive for about 7 years. And, you know, now my home's in Estes here, and I need to kind of stick around here and make sure it runs good. But, you know, the drive is it's a once-in-a-lifetime deal. You're never going to go down the road and see that many horses running down the road together.
So how many horses will you be moving, roughly?
Boy, it varies year to year. Gary, it just depends on the feed out in the park, where they want to pasture. You know, if they can't winter too many of them out there, you know, it may only be about 350 to 400. You know, if they got plenty of feed out there, they'll try to winter more of them out there. You know, it may get up to 600. You just never know.
Wow, wow. So you could be year. Yeah, you could be participating in a horse drive that had anywhere from 300 to 600 horses in it. And this is like the real deal thing. I mean, you're out there driving these horses, leading these horses through, heading them to where they're headed with a destination, and it's not a movie. So what do these guests do, Kansas, before they start the drive? They come in a few days ahead, a week of time ahead of time, because some of them may not have ridden before.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's actually been people on the drive that maybe been on a horse once or twice in their life.
Wow.
And so what they got to do is all these new guests, they come to the Big Gulch Ranch in Craig, and they camp out there. And they always sleep there at the same place every night. They bring their clothes and their bedroll. And what we do is we provide all the tack for them. We provide the horses, and we provide the ride of their life. And so they got to come in there a couple days, 3 days early, you know, get to know the wranglers that are helping them out, get to know the other guests, get to learn their horses, you know, Thursday and Friday. We're picking horses out for them and getting them on their horses, riding around the ranch. The Big Gulch Ranch is approximately 15 to 17,000 acres, I believe. And, you know, there's plenty of room to ride out there. So we get these people out there riding around the ranch and stuff a lot, and, you know, show them a good time. And then Saturday is when the drive actually starts.
Okay.
So we got to get all these people gathered up and get their horses gathered up, and we'll go off to Brown's Park, where there's another set of crew that is waiting for us. And they're gathering them horses up in that holding pasture I was telling you about. And then into the corrals, at the Lone Wolf corrals, and that's where the drive will start Saturday morning, about 9 o'clock or so.
Okay, so they're starting. They've come in for 2 or 3 days. They've gotten to where, if they've never ridden a horse, they've gotten kind of accustomed to their particular horse, and I'm sure getting some instruction as to what's going to happen on the drive. And you guys probably know a little bit who to watch out for and look after while you're out there doing that. But you're feeding them pretty well. You're feeding them pretty well too, I'm pretty sure, while they're coming in.
Oh yeah, we feed them real good. We don't want them to go empty-handed here.
Yeah, yeah. And so you start out then on Saturday morning, and you're going to ride 60 miles moving 300 or 400 or 500 horses, 60 miles across the open range there in Colorado, and headed toward this town of Maybell.
Well, I tell you, Mr. Holy, it's 60 miles total.
Okay.
So the first day, you're going to travel about 30 to 35 miles.
Okay.
So we have a halfway point where we overnight the horses in there, And then, you know, once we get to that overnight, all the guests are riding their first day horses. We just pull all their saddles and tack off of them and turn them out into the herd and just let them be with the herd the rest of the drive. And then next morning, they'll start out with their second day horse, and because they'll get two horses for the week.
Okay.
And a lot of times, you know, when we take breaks for the lunch hour or whatever, we eat sandwiches along the way on our horses sometimes, or we might get to get off for about 20 minutes to stretch our legs a little bit. But we'll have a couple of guys that are in charge of the horses. They go through and make sure that the horses are in good working order and plenty hydrated to finish the drive before we actually continue on. So we make sure that the horses are in good enough shape to finish out the day during the lunch hour. If they're not, we'll go get them another horse and let them finish out that day on a different horse. So,
okay.
Sometimes that does happen. A lot of times we try to make it to where they finish the day off on the same horse.
How many when you do the second day in Kansas and you start heading into Maybelle, Colorado?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I guess that little town is probably full days ahead of time when they know that you're coming.
You know, I've seen a lot of people come to that town where I don't even know how many people are in that town. Couldn't be more than 100. But I tell you what, there is probably thousands of people in that town when we come through with them horses.
Yeah,
They come from all over the state of Colorado, all over the United States, I think, to come watch their horses come through. You know, because they actually have like a big festival over there and everything else during that weekend. So,
well, it's a pretty big deal. And again, we've got some video posted on our website and our Facebook page of the horses coming through Maybelle. And there's some great video that's done where people are getting ready and are actually on the ride. But now you said that you'd done about seven of these.
I've done about seven of them. I really haven't sat down and counted them all, but I've done about seven of them. And I tell you what, even for a guy like me, it's a tough ride sometimes. You know,
what
you're
kind
riding
of
8 hours in the saddle, and you're not just walking down the road with these horses. They're moving at a good clip.
Yeah.
You could be running down the road. You could be just doing a little bit of a fast trot, or, you know, sometimes we get into a walk, but man, I tell you what, a lot of times you're moving with these horses. They're not like cattle.
Yeah, and you're eating a little dust, I'm sure, as you're going along.
You're eating a little bit of dust. Yes, sir.
Yeah. But during the 7 years, Kansas, that you were actually part of this ride, or roughly 7 years, what kind of reaction did you get from folks that had come in to be part of this? Maybe at the beginning, at the end, what kind of changes?
Well, I tell you what, I think people found out who they really were when they finished this drive, realized how much they could actually accomplish in themselves when they finished this drive. This is not an easy task for someone at faint or faint at heart, you know, or just you've got to have a lot of grit to do this drive. Because if you don't, man, it could be hard on you.
Yeah.
And people don't make it. But I tell you what, you put that little buckle dangling the carrot at the end of the drive, you see some grit come out in some people that you never thought would come out.
Gosh. Well, there's a great video and some great stories of particularly a couple of ladies, I guess, that did this last drive. And it was pretty touching. One was almost in tears. I think she came from New York to be part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she just really found out a lot about herself, that she said. Another lady whose husband had passed away. And I believe she felt a connection to him while she was out on this ride because she was completing part of what was on her bucket list. So it's just a really neat experience for folks. And, you know, I can just imagine. I mean, I've never seen 500 or 600 or 700 horses being herded in one direction, you know, at one time. A few.
Well, I tell you, it's exciting itself, that's for sure.
Yeah. It'd be great just to be sitting on top of a hill and watching down and looking out across that expanse of people and horses that were moving across the landscape.
I remember one of them years I snuck out of the back end and I went up and rode up on the ridge and just to watch them. I tell you what, that was the prettiest sight I've ever seen.
I bet it was. Well, and some pretty colorful characters that are taking part in this. You know, I know folks would like to find out how they could be part of this. And can you give us the website address?
Yes, sir. It is sombrero.com.
Okay.
And also there is a phone number you can call and be out of the main office in Longmont. It'd be 303-442-0258 and talk to Lee Peters.
All right. And I think I saw Lee in one of those videos, but
yeah, you might have. Oh, lucky Lee. He'll get you signed up on next year's drive. So
yeah,
and I'll tell you what, there are people from all over the world that have come out to participate in this horse drive.
Well, I'm sure there's some people that have probably come back more than once.
We've had some repeat customers come back. I remember this one gal, she comes from New York. I think I saw her four times in the 7 years I was moving.
Wow. Well, that is Sombrero Ranch. Sombrero.com is the website. It's Sombrero Ranch on Facebook. You can go over and like their page. Do you know what the dates are for the 2016 drive?
I'll tell you what, it's going to be the first weekend in May is all I can tell you right now. It may vary. You know, I don't want to give you a confirmed date, but first weekend of May, it's got to be like the first, May 1st better be on a Sunday or it's not going to happen that week.
Okay. All right. So they can check the website to get involved there. The list the rates for the 2016 event, and
I believe the rates are on there. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so the rates are on there for that. You can bet you're going to learn a little bit about horses, a lot about yourself. You're going to make friends.
They only take a certain number of guests too, so there will be some limited space on there.
Okay, so don't wait, and you'll make some lifelong friends while you're out there on that, and you'll get to meet some folks that you'll never forget while you're doing that. And you might even run up to Estes Park and visit with Kansas a little bit and say hi to him as well. So Kansas has been some good information here. A lot of folks that just have got this on their bucket list. And again, they can go to sombrero.com and find out more about what's involved and to make arrangements there. And almost anywhere in the state of Colorado, if you want to get out and ride on national parks or enjoy horses, you can do it with Sombrero Ranch. And for sure, at Estes Park with Kansas Sec. Kansas, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Appreciate it.
All right. And tell Cody thank you. And by the way, I'm Gary. My dad was Mr. Holt. So anyway, we look forward to talking with you again sometime soon.
All right,
Gary. All right. Thank you. And we're going to take a quick break and come back in just a moment. And right now we'll leave you with a little bit of Riders in the Sky. Don't Fence Me In and Don't Go Away. We'll be right back.
Wildcat Kelly, looking mighty pale, was standing by the sheriff's side. And when that sheriff said, "I'm sending you to jail," Wildcat raised his head and cried, "Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. I wanna be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in. Just turn me loose, let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I wanna ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't
let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in, don't fence me in, don't fence me in.
Don't fence me in, Riders in the Sky, and we've had a good show today. Always great to have Jim McGarvey with Backcountry Horsemen of America with us. A lot of good information there about issues and questions about these wildfires and how to best deal with that situation. And then a lot of fun talking with Cody and finding out a little bit about the history of Sombrero Ranch and Kansas, with some great information there on the North America's largest horse drive, and been going on for over 40 years, and people come from all across the globe to take part in that. And what a sight that would be to see. But we appreciate them being with us. And you can, again, visit them at sombrero.com and find out more about that as well. Anyway, a fun show, good information. And this would not be possible without our great sponsors for the show, Trail Guard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. You can learn more about them at trailguard.org. And Trailhead Supply, your full-service online horse packing supply store. You can shop with them today at trailheadsupply.com. And of course, our great sponsors in the general store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that just love the Western equestrian lifestyle. You can shop with them in the general store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. And we want to remind you about our Legacy Club. That Legacy Club membership is free. It entitles you to great discounts from all of our Legacy Club sponsors. And we have some really neat drawings once a month, and a big year-end drawing for a grand prize from Hydro Horse. And that is a portable two-horse watering system. And so we'll be giving that away at the end of the year. But we have great gifts that we award throughout the year with our monthly drawings. And so visit our Legacy Club sponsors there. You'll now find them in the general store as well. So, again, the Legacy Club is free, and it allows you to receive some discounts and special offers from our kind sponsors of the Legacy Club. We've got a big event that's coming up in Tennessee. It's going to be the first Tennessee Horse Expo, and that will be taking place in October at the Williamson County Ag Expo Center in Franklin, Tennessee. And we're happy to be a sponsor of that event this year. And we will be having some guests on that will be joining us to talk about some of the activities that are taking place there. They'll have great demonstrations. They're going to have a ranch horse competition. Craig Cameron will have an extreme cowboy competition that's going to take place. And I expect Craig will be joining us probably in the next month to talk about that. And as well as Mr. Coles, who is the producer of the event there. So put it on your calendar. There'll be great shopping as well. And it's just a beautiful facility. That's at the Williamson County Ag Expo Center, coming up in the middle of October for the first Tennessee Horse Expo there. And anyway, it's been a fun show. We've got a lot of exciting things that are happening with Equestrian Legacy Radio. We've got a tremendous show coming up Thursday. On the Campfire Cafe, we'll be having a special guest with Cowbop. If you love a little Western swing and jazz, you're going to enjoy Cowbop. So we're going to be talking with the Foremans, husband and wife, that are part of Cowbop, and share their great music. And then Robin Hutton, who is the author of a great book called Sergeant Reckless, America's War Horse, will be joining us. And there's quite a story about this little horse who has received two Purple Hearts and was the pride of the Marine Corps. So we're going to be talking with Robin as well about that. And then on Sunday, we'll have a great show with Belinda Gale on Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale. And of course, next Tuesday, we'll be visiting with Robert Eversole, and a great guest ranch will be one of our destinations for the next Tuesday show on Saddle Up America. Anyway, a lot of really neat stuff. We appreciate folks that send us messages. We got a great message from a listener in Scotland this week, and they are listening to the programs and loving the music that we share. And they found out about us from some friends that were out in Colorado. So we appreciate people that take the time to send us a message and let us know what they think about our programming. And we always enjoy hearing from our listeners. But anyway, it's time for us to close this up today. We're going to close the show with a beautiful song from Lacey J. Dalton called Boundless Skies. We thank you for listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. And we remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world, online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Deep in my heart, there's a place I can go, where I'm one with the wind blowing down off the snow, far beyond thought, down where the mighty rivers flow, one with the earth, one with the stars. I'm home under these boundless skies, in the canyon of eternity, where the eagle flies over fields of stone. When I'm here, I'm home. Deep in my heart, when my soul, it can break free of the flesh and the bone in these boundless skies, in the limitless light of the mystery. I am one with all in the great unknown. When I'm here, I'm home. Beyond time and space, beyond thought, beyond limitation, all that I've been, all that I'll be, lives in the light of creation. In these boundless skies, in the canyons and the halls of eternity, where the eagle flies over fields of stone. When I'm here, I'm home. Deep in my heart, there's a place I can go, I'm one with the wind, blowing down off the snow, far beyond thought, down where the mighty rivers flow, one with the earth, one with the stars. I'm home under these boughs. in the limitless light of the mystery. I am one with all in the great unknown. When I'm here,